Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, great show ahead today. We're going to give our smoking hot takes on the just-ended Duke-Syracuse game, recap midweek action, and of course, preview the biggest games of the weekend. And there are a few great ones for fans to salivate over this week. We also talked to head coach of a top 10 team that has a relatively small body of work that a lot of people aren't talking about. And that is Lehigh head coach, Kevin Cassis.
Dixie, let's get it.
Dixie, a little guest whip action there today. I mentioned on Twitter a couple of weeks ago that we were about to leave the house for something. And I asked my 7-year-old daughter, I said, Hannah, are you ready to go? And she said, Dixie, let's get it. And so some people have been saying, you should have Hannah do that or have guests do it. So now my kids also, they like to practice the little whip noise. They go like, did I do it right, Dad? Did I do it right? And I said, Lee, you need a little more like follow through. Like,
yeah.
And so Hannah got to do it tonight, and we'll see. You know, if you guys want to, record it and send it to me, and maybe Dix and I will include you in a future podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a couple things. One, so my boys are 18 and 16, and
I think this is definitely a Matt Dixon thing. He needs to record Dixie Let's Get It with the whip and send it over to me.
What I was going to say is whip has a much different meaning in our house. You know, they're both high school boys and they've had girlfriends. My younger son, Owen, has a girlfriend. So when we do the, hey, the whip, it's like, oh yeah, Owen, your whip, like we do it in succession like that. Everybody gets a good laugh out of it. But big fan of the Hannah Flynn whip. I haven't even heard it yet, but I know it's when I listen back to it, it's going to be fantastic. And, you know, so what have we had over the years? We've had listener email. We had the hotline the 1 year where people called.
Didn't have hotline and people would leave messages. I totally forgot all about that.
A couple times a year, we'll do the mailbag where people tweet us questions. This is the latest venture for D-Fly and Dixie.
We're all about the fans.
Record your Dixie, let's get it, and your and send it in, and we'll use it. Much like your genius, your brilliant producing of stringing together all the player guests we've had over the years with, hi, this is Asher Nolting. This is Bubba Fairman. This is T.D. Irwin. Hi, this is Brendan Kurt. Like, that's awesome. And, you know, I love that.
So, yeah, thank you. I'm proud of that.
Coming up with new intros.
That was it. I don't know. I think I was jogging or something one day. It was an inspiration. I'm like, oh, I know exactly how I want the intro to sound this year. I want to string all the players together. I want it to sound just like this. I want them to say like, and it turned out great. So
isn't it amazing? You do. I do my best thinking when I'm exercising.
Yeah. I always have
in particular too. Because that's, you know, the endorphins are flowing and your mind is open, and I'll come up with like 5 or 6 ideas when I go running, and then I'll come home and forget about every single one of them.
Man, that's why I preach to my little kids about lifelong fitness and exercise, not just for that, but at different times in my life, team sports, or when you get out on the field, where you're playing lacrosse or basketball or football, whatever it is that you do, like ball sports in particular, that's when you can also forget all of your stress and your troubles. At the same time, you know, when you're, you know, obviously if you're like swimming or running or biking or walking, that's like time to focus. But when you're in the middle of a game and all you care about is the score and winning, that I always used to just go, when I was having my worst days, my most stressful days, I try to go play some pickup basketball, because I would just get involved and forget about everything I was doing
and just ball out and play. And then I'd, you know, you break a sweat, you feel much better, you're tired when you're done. And it was always like, it's medicine. It's medicine. All right, Dix, let's get some hot takes. We got a lot to talk about, and mostly let's talk about the game that just ended. Duke Blue Devils start strong, play great first half, come away with a 15-14 comeback win. Syracuse pulls back in the game in the second half. Outstanding game, lots of action up and down. Michael Sowers has 6 points for Duke. Steven Rathus was outstanding. Chase Scanlon, Owen Hiltz, Tucker Dordovic for the Orange. Just a great game all around. Give me your overall reaction to what you just saw.
High-level lacrosse, fast lacrosse. I thought early in the game, Syracuse was having trouble adjusting to grass. It was their first game out of the Carrier Dome, so the grass surface, it looked like they were slow and that Duke was taking advantage of that. But then again, when you have Michael Sowers doing what he does behind the cage, changing direction, quick dodging, that can make you look slower. But I mean, really, much like that Carolina Virginia game a couple Thursdays ago, this game, it had a second quarter run that was astounding. Duke, Jake Nazo just went off and started winning faceoff after faceoff. And I think there was 10 or 11 minutes left in the second quarter when Syracuse got their second faceoff violation. And it's really difficult to adjust as a faceoff man, you know, not to jump and or not to violate again. It's so funny in the shot clock era, people will point to, faceoffs aren't that as important as they used to be, or they're not a real good predictor of outcomes. But I think we're seeing that when you have the ball for extended periods of time and you can start going downhill on teams, you know, we've seen it out of Maryland in the fourth quarter against Rutgers a couple weeks ago. We saw it tonight when Duke made that run in the second quarter. But credit Syracuse on the road. I thought they were toast, really, at halftime. And they fought back and did a great job. And when you look at the final stat sheet, I mean, it's as even as a scoreboard. You know, 15-14 Duke wins, 9 assisted goals for Syracuse, 8 for Duke, 41 shots for Duke, 36 for Cuse. Ground balls, though, and that's the difference in the faceoff right there. 31 for Duke, 15 for Cuse. And Duke won 24 out of 32 faceoffs. So they staked that lead. And then, you know, Cuse did an amazing job of coming back, but it's so hard to come back, right? And then when you get there and you get it tied, that's where you're like, okay, that's like, you know, you ran up 3/4 of the hill, but you still have that quarter left. So those are some of my initial thoughts on the game.
Yeah, a lot of time teams that need to come back from a big deficit expend so much energy, both mentally and physically, that it's tough to keep that edge. So let's look into this a little bit deeper. In the first half, you and I talked earlier today, and you had mentioned that, you know, you really thought whoever won faceoffs and could control the ball and possessions would have an advantage, because both of these offenses are incredibly strong and multi-talented and deep, that the defenses would have had trouble stopping them. And that certainly was the case. I have a question for you. So everyone knows Duke has an extraordinary extra man offense, scoring a 50% or better. As Syracuse gets in that penalty on faceoffs, do you think that starts playing into your mental approach to the game? You're like, we cannot get another faceoff violation because Duke will get an extra man each time. So you start playing it a little bit different. Naso can start being a little more aggressive on his faceoffs. And that, as you said, they were just running downhill at that point, building up a big lead in that second quarter.
Yeah, yes and yes. And I think obviously you have in the back of your mind, you don't want Duke with the extra man with a unit as prolific as they possess. But really, even if Duke was 20%, you still don't want to give your opponent those EMOs. So it just makes your faceoff man cautious. Some guys thrive in that situation and other guys are a little bit more careful. And I think we see more of the latter because you have to be careful. Like, you can't be as quick and as aggressive off of the whistle. So I think that's a yes and yes answer to that question.
So second half, Syracuse has a big deficit, and give them a lot of credit. The Orange fought back and chipped away at that lead. What did they do to get back in the game?
They got possessions, and they started getting – they got some saves as well. Drake Porter finished the game with 13 saves. So, he was making stops. Their defense clamped down. I thought their interior defense in the first half was not good. I thought it was gross. Tight window feeds by Duke were happening. And I thought that they did a much better job of guarding the interior. I also thought and give credit to Syracuse, but I thought that Duke was attacking with Sowers a little too much behind the cage. I would have liked to have seen the Duke middies get involved more in the second half. And I thought they did get involved more at the end of the game to get them the win. They drew some penalties. And I believe Williams, was it Dyson Williams with the game winner? I'd have to go back and look at the score sheet, but that was on EML, right? That was an extra man situation. Yeah. But Drake Porter with the saves. But if you're going to talk about Drake Porter, you know, Mike Adler only had 10 saves on the game, but two of them were at the end of the game.
Including a buzzer save,
which may or may not have. You know, that was a great handle by, I think it was Rafis, and I don't know where that shot was tracking towards. If it was going to hit the pipe, if it was going to go behind the cage, or if it was on cage. But Adler was there. He was there, and he made the stop. Case closed, game over. Those are some of the things I liked how it was that beautiful backdoor cut from Brendan Curry to stop the bleeding for Syracuse. It was early in the third quarter, just a great fake and a backdoor cut and a tidy finish. Like, those are the kind of plays that really energize you when one of your best players in a galaxy of many talented on Syracuse makes a play like that. That's a juice play. It's a big goal. And look, you know, they had to overcome. Owen Hiltz played well in the first quarter, but after that, he was in all essence, he was a non-factor. I questioned JT Giles Harris being on him just because Giles Harris is such an excellent cover man and a ball hawk. You know, having a player like that take an off-ball guy. And don't get me, you know, Hiltz is great with the ball, but really he makes his living off ball. He's a stretch. He's got range. He can find seams and pockets, and he was eliminated from this game. So credit Giles Harris for his defensive performance on Owen Hiltz.
Two pivotal moments in the game. You talked about Sowers trying to create from behind the goal. About 8 minutes left, he gets switched on to a shorty. It's Dirth behind the cage. And you really think
– not a bad matchup, by the way, for Syracuse.
No, at this point, it's tied. Mm-hmm. And you think that Duke really has an advantage. He tries to create something, passes it out to the midfield, passes low. It's mishandled. It goes it's a turnover to Syracuse. And that was a chance for Duke to capitalize. They didn't. Syracuse goes down and scores and takes their first lead of the game since it was 3-2 early on. And then, as you mentioned, Dyson Williams gets that extra man goal. Well, Let's get back to the last sequence. Syracuse goes up a man. There's a penalty with about 16 seconds left, flags thrown. And I don't remember who it was, but he's going for the ball. It was a really heads up play to let Duke pick it up because now you have 2-man advantage.
Yeah.
With about 14 seconds left.
Yeah, I said that.
Not a lot of time, but
I was watching a game with my younger son, Owen. I was like, Duke probably should have kept that loose. You know, like goose it toward the sideline or something and then just, you know, slow play that thing out of bounds. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So then they get the ball back with 14 seconds left. They work a shot for Tremboli that's just really wide right and high. And that sets and allows one man to come in. So they're up one man. And then that last play really executed well. Hiltz throws it in to Rafis. Rafis takes the best shot you're going to get in that situation. He, as you mentioned, he handles
the only shot.
He handles a tough pass, puts it on the cage, and Adler just comes up with a huge save.
Yeah.
Lots of credit all around for pretty good execution, but the defensive execution on that and save by Adler won the game for him.
Well, how about Adler, too? Adler went low. Like, his body was low, but he kept his stick high. So he was – I don't want to say fooled, but his body was in one place and he had the reflexes and the instinct to get his stick up to make that stop. So that was a huge save for Mike Adler. I talk about it all the time, especially in this day and age with such talented shooters. You know, it's hard to find goalies with save percentage 55-60% at the highest level. And both of these keepers, Porter and Adler, for the game under 50%. But it's not so much the quantity of saves, it's the quality, like when you make it. Like we saw Colin Kerst this past weekend. You know, one of the reasons Rutgers was able to dust Hopkins the way they were was, yeah, they were clicking offensively. They started winning faceoffs, but also Colin Kerst in the goal made saves. And that's huge. So terrific game. Really, really nice game tonight in Durham. Really good game.
Yeah, awesome game. Duke moves to 9-0 on the season. They're 1-0 in the ACC. And number four, Syracuse falls to 4-2 overall, 1-1 in the ACC. But it really sets up for fans and some great action to come. And the ACC should be really fun to watch. And there's a lot of good these Thursday games. It's going to be tough for us podcasters, Dix.
I know. Yeah, Friday morning, we're dragging. But hey, think about it. Duke and Cuse, that was the argument preseason. Who's number one? Like, you know, a lot of people had Duke number one simply because of all the folks that were coming in, you know, the transfers. And then obviously Brendan O'Neill, the number one rated freshman in the country by Inside Lacrosse. And then, but, you know, the argument with Syracuse, I mean, God, you got that midfield and you know, you've got Scanlon back and Rafis back and Porter back and, you know, all those things. So that it really, I mean, it looked like a clunker by halftime, right? I mean, it was, we were texting one another like, oh man, you know, this is turning into be a dog, but it really picked up in the second half and proved to be a great game.
All right, Dix, I want to get your opinion on two other midweek games of a little bit of consequence or interesting stories. First one, Binghamton beat UMBC 8-7 in overtime. I think this is game significant. Binghamton was down a couple of guys, and we're going to talk about the Albany UMass game next, but and they won in overtime. But interesting, those teams are going to turn right around and play again this weekend. That game was at Binghamton, I think. I think they'll come down to Baltimore and play this Saturday in a really unusual circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like High Point Carolina all over again, you know, the short turnaround time. But big, big win for the Bearcats. You know, UMBC have been the cardiac retrievers. You got a bottle of wine with you. You're not messing around.
It's a Thursday night.
A bottle of wine?
Yeah, I'm trying to. This is
normally
show.
Normally when I'm on Zoom calls, it's people like, you know, taking a hit of their water bottle or their I don't know.
You think that's water? You think that's water?
No, I know it's not water. You got a whole. I'm just.
No, I mean the people on your calls at work.
Oh, I mean, I'm not here to judge. I can only report what I see. But I was wondering what that big box was, and you kept pulling the plug out. Your box, your Rianiti.
What is that stuff? What my sister used to drink it. It's so bad.
Boone's Farm?
No, that comes in a bottle.
Oh, you cold. Think about a Rianiti was the box one.
No, what is it? It's like a different Franche, brand. It's really bad. It's like $3 for
$3 for a 5 gallon box. No, so America East play picking up. UMBC had a good track record of winning overtime games, but Binghamton flips the script, and they'll turn right around. And where was the game last weekend? Was up in New York, right? The Binghamton, was that?
I think the game on Wednesday was in Binghamton, and they'll come down.
Yeah, and then they're playing.
I think that's what it is
this weekend,
or it's the other way around.
Yeah, but who knows?
Either way, it's a very unusual circumstance. I think.
Hey, welcome to 2021 COVID. I mean, everyone is. I mean, look at the Big Ten, the first half of the Big Ten schedule. All five games have been played now. Mm-hmm. And you go into the second half of the schedule, and it's a two-week turnaround. So Rutgers, Maryland, Hopkins, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. It seems like they just played each other. Well, because they did. So I guess it would be equivalent to maybe Major League Baseball, the unbalanced schedule. Is that what they call it? Instead of it following the same pattern. But I think – and it's interesting because, you know, Ohio State, Michigan is the rivalry game. Hopkins, Maryland is the rivalry game. Penn State, Rutgers is a rivalry game, at least the way it shapes up for Big Ten lacrosse. And I think, you know, Maryland and Hopkins don't play each other until that last weekend of the regular season. So just some really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it makes your scout real easy for your next camp. You pretty much know what's going to happen, right? In the other news, I mentioned Albany 13, UMass 12. Albany played without three key guys who were suspended after a fight in the Binghamton game over the weekend. And that was a surprising result to me. What'd you think?
Yeah, because, you know, UMass has been, you know, granted it was only their third game of the year after their first four games were postponed slash canceled, whatever, however they're going to handle those things. Yeah, but UMass is a team that still hung around the top 15, and then they've slowly been creeping up with success. And I think Albany dropped out of favor with a lot of people after they lost to Vermont, kind of like Delaware. When Delaware, everybody was like, oh, the Blue Hens aren't that good, when they lost to Mount St. Mary's, their first game of the season. But like we talk about on this podcast oftentimes, you know, guilty with explanation. You know, here's – they lost, yeah, but here's – if you look behind the curtain, here's why. And so in this, in that Albany Binghamton game, I guess the fracas, I haven't seen a brawl like that since the Ohio State Hopkins Big Ten tournament semifinal game in 2018. And here's the deal with the mechanics normally in three man for referees. There is a little bit of policing of that box. You know, you kind of swing through the box to make sure everything is clear. But with COVID, referees are discouraged from going into that box area for social distancing purposes and that kind of thing. So the box got a little out of hand. And I guess an Albany player was coming off as a Binghamton player was coming off. And it looked like the Binghamton kid went out of his way to clock the, you know, the Albany guy. And then that started a real Donnybrook. I don't mean to laugh, but what was interesting about that fight is it didn't seem like either bench was too interested in breaking it up. Normally you see, like, you know, coaches or administrators or whatever, I mean, they're like, you know, they're like streaking in there to break that thing up. I didn't see a whole lot of quickness out of either staff to break it up. So credit Albany, because maybe Vermont is better than we're giving them credit for, and potentially, you know, beating that Albany team, you know, sets them up for success. But maybe that loss to Vermont isn't as damaging, you know. And I think that's the unforgiving nature to an extent. When you vote in that poll, you're like, oh, Albany, you know, I thought they were going to win the America East, but they lost to Vermont. Boom, let's drop them or whatever. And I think you got to give a lot more credit to these teams in the America East, you know, in the Northeast Conference, especially in a year where the Ivies aren't playing. There are going to be more teams taking up residence in the top 20 that traditionally may not be there for an extended period of time. So really nice win for the Danes.
Next, it's time for news of the week.
I love how I have you saying that every week. It's great. Have you watched that guy on video yet, by the way?
Never have.
You gotta check out some of his food reviews. They're entertaining.
And there's really only one item, and it's that the Penn lacrosse team has moved to stage four and is looking to schedule some games. The Ivy League, we know their situation, where a lot of schools are, but Penn yesterday opened up spring scheduling, and, you know, the baseball team's got a slate of games. The women's lacrosse team has three games on the schedule. The track and field teams, all of their spring sports have, but the men's lacrosse team, TBA. And I talked to a representative of Penn, a friend of mine, and they're looking for games. And I know they're going to be tough to come by. I think everybody thinks that, but they do have a 40-mile restriction for travel still in their phase four, stage four. So they need to either meet halfway or have people come to Philadelphia. But fortunately, there are quite a few Division I lacrosse programs in the Philadelphia area, and maybe they'll get to get out on the field and mix it up with another team. And that would be great for all involved, including student athletes, fans, parents.
Well, we had six games canceled last weekend, and you hope that doesn't happen again, but Penn may have some opportunity if opponents of Drexel, Villanova, St. Joe's,
or say a Lehigh, as we talked to Kevin.
Sure.
Cease earlier about, he said, you know, they were looking for a game. The timing obviously is wrong, but
is Bethlehem within 40 miles of Philly, though, is the question.
Perhaps it can meet somewhere else.
No, absolutely. Meet,
well, here's another thing. I don't think Lehigh, Lafayette, Bucknell, they might not have the same travel restrictions. Mm-hmm. I mean, as Kevin says, and you'll hear later in our interview with Kevin, he talks about they just can't have an overnight. They can make a day trip almost any distance. So they can certainly head to Philly or meet somewhere halfway. So
good points.
For the Quakers, it's good news. And for lacrosse fans, it's good news.
And it's free lacrosse too, in that the Ivy League made the announcement that this year's a mulligan for their spring athletes, or all athletes, isn't it?
All of them.
So
all of them. So let's move to the game previews. And there are some dandies this week.
Some humdingers.
There are some heavyweight fights this week, including a matchup of two of the top teams in the Big Ten, and a second, in addition to Thursday night's action, of top 10 matchup in the ACC. Also, key games in SoCon, America East, and the Big East. So let's start on Friday night, Dix. A huge game in the SoCon. High Point, who is 0-4 in the ACC, but 0-0 in the SoCon, looking for their first game in the league action this year, will take on number 20 Richmond, who's 2-0 in the SoCon, 5 p.m. this evening.
What's the old Paris Hilton soundbite? Huge, huge game for the SoCon, jockeying. And both these teams are battle-tested, having played a number of really, really good teams up to this point. Star power, Asher Nolting for the Panthers. Rogers, the transfer from Lynchburg, is acclimated to the Division I game and is producing at a high level. You know, Lance Berry for Richmond. I think he had 9 points in the Spiders' last game. So he's rounding into form. Miss Savaka, tremendous middie for Richmond. So this will be a really entertaining game. And traditionally, it's been a really good contest. I want to say, was it last year? One of these guys blew each other out. I can't remember exactly. And maybe I have, because you get that collection of it's Richmond, High Point, Air Force has been in the mix in the SoCon tournament the last few years. Jacksonville, yeah, the Dolphins. But really, it seems like it's been consistently like a three-horse race between Air Force, Richmond, and High Point. But this one will be great. This one will be fun. And finally, they get some conference competition, a little taste of that. And you see, like, you know, programs like Richmond, like High Point, like Jacksonville play these meaty out of conference schedules so that when they get to conference play, they're not going to be surprised by any type of athleticism, stick skill, whatever. So this will be a terrific game between two really good teams.
I agree. And we've seen how important these league games are to these teams. They do play strong out of conference schedules to be battle tested. But as we saw with High Point a couple of years ago, having a great regular season record, including a couple of good wins, they didn't win the SoCon auto berth. Right. They didn't make the NCAA tournament. So these games are imperative that they get W's in these. And these teams are going to go at it tonight in Richmond.
Yes, sir.
All right. Saturday games. We'll start with the biggest game of the day. Number 9, Virginia, 6-2 overall, but 0-2 in the ACC. Take on number 6, Notre Dame in South Bend. Notre Dame's 4-0, and that game will kick off the action at noon.
Virginia just hasn't been the same since they gritted out a tough win over Army weeks ago. They were dominant against Air Force, but the Falcons so far have struggled in 2021. But I'm interested to see which Virginia team shows up. They've made some lineup shuffles. They're getting decent goaltending. I don't think their defense has been wonderful. And that's the exact opposite of Notre Dame. Those guys with Entman in the goal and Kielty and Cohen, those guys on the back line. So really it's strength against strength. It's the Virginia offense, which typically is a strength. They really haven't come together, I think, as much as they would have liked so far in 2021, but they're going to have to be on point against Notre Dame, especially at Arlotta. This is a big test for Virginia. I know a lot of people are saying Notre Dame hasn't played the most challenging schedule thus far, and they've kind of steamrolled the competition. I would say this game is more about Virginia than it is about Notre Dame. Can they get their first conference win? Can they start sharing the ball better? Can they get better defense? Can they just play that style of Virginia lacrosse that drives opponents crazy? And we'll see that on Saturday. That's not to say that Notre Dame is not a huge test for them either. I think the question marks here are, if Virginia does come to play and is grooving, will, if the defense holds them, let's say they give up 11, can Notre Dame score 12 to win this game? I think they can, if they only give up 8, I think they can get to 9, but can they squeeze out some of those extra goals? I think Notre Dame will enjoy a possession advantage. I think they have the advantage in the faceoff. So I'm interested to see how this one will play out.
Our next game features a team we've talked about a little bit, Albany, 2-1 in the America East. Travel to Stony Brook to take on a team that's 2-1 for a pivotal game in the America East. That's at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, I guess you could say the America East on the early returns looks like it might come down to Albany and Vermont, but I think UMBC is going to have something to say about that. The Bing upset the Retrievers earlier in the week. And the Seawolves are a team that could score goals. I mean, they've got a potent offense, and they played Syracuse fairly well a couple weeks ago up in the Carrier Dome. So this one is a game at Stony Brook.
Just Stony Brook,
because that's a different animal. You know, when you play at Stony Brook, you know that they like their home field, and they definitely have an advantage there. So
this is upstate versus Long Island, man.
Oh yeah,
these guys will be ready to go at it.
Yeah, this is what? I don't know. Pizza against delis kind of thing.
And our final game on Saturday is in the Big East. Don't hate me on this, Dix. Villanova travels to number 11 Georgetown. And Villanova's 3-1 overall, 3-1 in the Big East. Georgetown's 5-1 overall, 4-1 in the Big East. I think this is going to be a different game than what we saw when Georgetown just destroyed them 16-1 to open the season.
I think Villanova's hoping along the same lines that you're thinking, because that was a whooping. Yeah, it was. And Villanova's gotten better. They missed their game last week against Denver because of COVID issues. So that time away, it's really interesting when you look at this. When you get time away, does it hurt you? Is it neutral or does it help? Because, you know, in a lot of ways, like people will say, like, let's take a player like Jared Bernhardt, who just is constantly working, constantly lifting, shooting, playing 110 miles an hour. A lot of people will say him being away from the game in the fall really rejuvenated him as a player, not only not burning him out, but also giving his body an opportunity to rest. I know it's not as extended period that Bernhardt enjoyed in the fall, but maybe the however long Villanova was off will do them well in terms of healing up from some injury. But, you know, Georgetown, after dropping the game 13-7 to Denver, rebounded with a 14-9 win over Providence last weekend. Interested to see if Gibson Smith returns for this one. The reports were he would be out for a few games, and it has been a few games. Does he return?
He has an injury, right? He does not have a COVID.
To my knowledge, it is not a COVID situation. It is an injury situation. He was injured, I believe, in their Mount St. Mary's game a few weeks back. So we'll see if he comes back, because he just takes that already really good defense to a whole nother level, you know, in front of goaltender Owen McElroy. But it's interesting, right? I mean, it's interesting.
You got me thinking, man. You got me like in we saw it in basketball, NCAA basketball a lot, where again, the rosters are so much smaller. So you're talking about 15 guys, you know, 13 scholarship guys, but teams that had a COVID pause really struggled in their first game action back. You know, Baylor, who's a number one seed, really struggled. Louisville. I mean, any of those teams that had a COVID pause, Kansas never really recovered from it. Like we saw that a lot. But in lacrosse, you have a much bigger roster. So
yeah,
three guys get COVID on your basketball team, That's devastating.
That could be a third of your roster.
Three guys in lacrosse, maybe not so much. So it will be interesting to see the difference in those two sports and how teams can recover or get tanked and stalled out by COVID. So I'm with you. I'm very interested to see how Villanova responds and how other teams have responded from a break from COVID.
Right on.
Sunday, Dix, we got two games. Let's start with a barn burner rematch in the Big Ten. Number 3, Maryland. Some people have them as number 1 team in the country. They're 5-0. They will travel up the turnpike to play number 5, Rutgers, who's 4-1. That game is at noon on Sunday. Huge game. You know both these teams really well. What's going to happen?
Rumors are that Snooki in the situation will try to get into the game. But we'll see. I think it's another opportunity for Rutgers to beat a Maryland team they haven't triumphed over since 1980, and they haven't beaten them since Big Ten play began back in 2015. Okay, so that's first and foremost. It was wicked how that first game turned on that failed clear from Rutgers. Really crazy. And I haven't seen Ryan Gallagher much since then. He's the player that dropped the ball, and Gallagher's been a main contributor to the Scarlet Knights over his first 3.5 years in Piscataway, and he really has been absent. He was absent. He wasn't a big contributor in the Hopkins-Rutgers game this past weekend that the Scarlet Knights won. So I think if you're Rutgers, you almost, and I hate to say this, you almost have to play a perfect game against Maryland because you have psychological piece in the back of your mind, let alone the physical battle that you have with the Terps. I mean, they're so athletic. They're so confident. They're so aggressive. And they're playing at such a high level right now in all those categories. You're thinking Rutgers may need almost a perfect game to beat Maryland on Sunday.
Before we get to our final game of the weekend, Dix, and it's Lehigh and Colgate, let's bring in our special guest this week, Lehigh head coach Kevin Cassis. Now in his 14th season in Bethlehem, his Mountain Hawks are 3-0, ranked number 10 in this week's IL Media Poll. Coach Cassis, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So, Kevin, Lehigh, you guys are off to a terrific start in 2021, but it hasn't been without its challenges, and it hasn't been without the stops and starts that most, if not all, teams have experienced in 2021. What has the experience been like up in Lehigh Valley for for your team, and how have you dealt with all the challenges that have been put in front of you?
Yeah, it's definitely been tough, but I think it's been tough for everybody. And you know, for us, it's been just a struggle to be able to be together at all and get in practices and eventually play games. And you know, I just go back to the fall. I mean, we were only able to get one full team practice in the entire fall. We had a couple different shutdowns, and you know, one was team related with an outbreak within our team. The other one was more on a university and athletic department basis. And so we really struggled to get off the ground in the fall. And then we didn't, you know, get to begin until February 1st. That was a university mandate start for classes and any activities, sports or otherwise. So it was just a late start overall. And that's why we only have 3 games under our belts right now. You know, we had a late start. And then also we dealt with some COVID issues just with our entry testing, and ended up with about a 25% of our team in quarantine. We were supposed to play Albany in that first weekend. We were able to compete that February 20th, 21st weekend. And then, you know, all of a sudden we had a handful of guys in quarantine, a bunch of guys injured, limited practice time, you know, due to the weather. And Albany had the same things going on and just couldn't get together to get that game in. So it's been definitely a lot of challenges, but you know, things have been going well lately. Right now we're hitting week number 6 of, you know, 100% of negative tests within our team. And we're getting tested, you know, twice a week, mostly every week, and things have been going pretty well. And Obviously we didn't have a game last week. So that was tough. You know, when things are going well, you want to get as many games as possible, but we'll be back at it this weekend when we go up to Colgate.
You mentioned not having the game last weekend, and we've had Lars Tiffany from Virginia on the podcast, as well as JL Repper from Holy Cross. And they were able to tell us success stories of being able to get games because of shift in schedule on short notice. But you guys tried incredibly hard for last weekend to get a game with different characters involved in the scenario, but it just didn't work out. Can you describe that situation to us where you have an open date and you're trying to get an opponent and it just doesn't happen?
Yeah, it was just unfortunate. I feel, you know, badly for the kids, most of all, because, you know, they've done so much to get back into, you know, the in-season mode and be able to put themselves in position to play games. And then to not have one on a weekend is disappointing. You know, I think overall we're grateful that we have a season. So I think when we sit back and put it in perspective, you know, we can get past not having one game on a weekend. But it wasn't for a lack of effort. You know, we tried very much, you know, with some of the pauses that we're on. I think there was five games total that were canceled, or postponed due to one team getting put on pause. So there were five other teams that were potentially available. You know, the one that made the most sense for us was Syracuse, you know, with them opening up and, you know, the fact that, you know, they're a day trip for us, we would have, you know, they had a slot that they were supposed to play Hofstra in on Saturday afternoon. And we felt like that would be a nice one. And, you know, two highly ranked teams and, you know, an easy trip. So, but listen, at the end of the day, you know, we were trying to do what was best for our program. Syracuse had to do what was best for their program. And, you know, for them, they moved forward and scheduled Holy Cross. And we still tried to schedule some other teams as well. For instance, I spoke to Marquette and Coach Stimmel, and, you know, they got put on, or at least St. John's was their opponent. They got put on pause, and, you know, they had a flight coming out to Queens. And I said, hey, you want to still get on that flight? And they kind of missed the boat on that one as far as being able to take that flight. But it would have took a lot of logistical changes. Same thing for Denver. You know, they were supposed to play at Villanova, reached out to Coach Tierney, and, you know, they weren't sure if they were going to have to come back out later on and play at Villanova, what they needed to do with those flights. So there were just a lot of moving parts and a lot of logistics when you're trying to make schedule adjustments last minute. And just turned out that, you know, we didn't get a game on the weekend, and, you know, we used the practice and some of that practice time we lost early on in February, you know, that we were able to gain some of that back, and hopefully we're a better version of ourselves heading into the next few games.
Your offense has been excellent so far in the early going. Tommy Schelling was really good last year, led your team in scoring in the abbreviated season, and he's been your leading scorer. But I'm interested in learning about and hearing you talk about Christian Moulet and John Sidorsky and Cole Kearse, how they've come on and the evolution of this attack unit.
Yeah, offensively, I feel like, you know, we're playing pretty well, mainly because we've been playing together and playing a great team brand of ball. And I give a lot of credit to our offensive coordinator, John Crawley. I think he's special. I think he's a rising star in the profession, and the way that he coaches our guys, just a very unselfish style, very much a basketball oriented offense that he brings to the table, and one that he ran at Hopkins and worked with Bobby Benson on. And, you know, he's brought that everywhere that he's gone in coaching, and obviously being here now, you know, last year being year number one for him and then having that get cut short, we never really got to see kind of the fruits of the labor with that. I thought we were very vanilla in what we were doing offensively. And I feel like this year has been a continuation of that, and, you know, still pretty vanilla in what we've been able to do just with lack of practice time. But I think the biggest keys are just, you know, having everybody play together and all six working together. You know, no doubt, you know, you see some of the guys that have points, you know, that have done it consistently, guys like Tommy Schelling, for sure. Definitely a quarterback type of a player and a catalyst. But I think, you know, at the attack position, guys like Christian Moulet and Cole Kearse, they all complement each other very well. You know, you mentioned, you know, John Sidorsky. He's had a great season, and, you know, he's doing a really nice job, and, you know, in a lot of ways facilitating and becoming a little bit of a point guard out of the midfield. And we had Kevin Gersbeck step up in our last game, you know, as a senior. You know, he's someone that you know, we've, you know, kind of been hoping would step up for us, but he's dealt with a lot of injuries and, you know, feel like he's really hitting his stride. And so I feel like, you know, midfield wise, there's just a lot of key components. And, you know, you have some senior leaders, guys like Andrew Eichelberger and Cruz Cintron that have been around for, you know, a bunch of years that understand the system, that are great leaders and are great glue guys. So, and I feel pretty good about where we are offensively, but I also feel like we have a lot of developing to do.
You talked about John Crawley being on your staff. You also have Will Scudder, but you also have a unique situation in that your father is part of your lacrosse family, part of your staff at Lehigh. How would you best describe that and how special that is to you and what he imparts to the players?
Yeah, it's been great having my dad involved. And, you know, I've been at Lehigh for 14 years. He's been involved every step of the way. You know, just happened that when I got the job at Lehigh, was the year that he retired from coaching high school football at Comstock High School out on Long Island. And we kind of looked at each other and said, hey, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I got a spot for you. I would love to have you join us. So early on, he was our volunteer assistant. And then, you know, we kind of moved him into an administrative role in the last few years. And, you know, to be able to spend that time with him has been outstanding. It's been really, you know, helpful, honestly, because we've always traditionally had a young staff here, and to have somebody who's been in coaching for so long and, you know, been around sports, whether it be football or lacrosse or anything, to be able to bounce things off of him. And the one thing he knows is he knows kids, and you know, to get his perspectives have been awesome. The downside for this year is that, you know, we haven't been able to have him around very much, just because of the COVID situation. And, you know, my parents have basically been locked up, you know, at home on Long Island for about a year now. And, you know, it's been tough that way. So he hasn't been around as much, but we're hoping now with the vaccine rollout, they're both now fully vaccinated. So we're hoping that we can get him back. But anytime we can have him around, it's a major bonus for us.
Kevin, we talked about your offense a little bit. James Spence has been incredible in goal for you guys, saving about 70% of shots and team leader from the back end. What's he meant to your team and your defense?
Yeah, James Spence has been spectacular. I feel like the game is really slowing down for him. You know, it's as a senior, that's kind of the way that it should be. But I think for him, he's seeing the ball well. You know, he's got a great command of the defense, understanding the way that we're trying to play, the shots that we're trying to give up, and how to really orchestrate that in front of him. But also be focused enough to be able to stop the ball and make the plays that he needs to make. So I feel like our defense has played well in front of him, but I feel like, you know, he's been spectacular at times and has stolen a lot of great scoring opportunities right in front of his face. So I think he's been great. I think, you know, just the last 2 years, you know, the goalie coaches that we've had for him, last year it was Jack Duragan. This year it's Colin Nesdale, which is also a pretty unique situation. We were able to scoop up Colin from Yale. He was the volunteer assistant at Yale. And when it was decided that they weren't going to play this year, we have a very good relationship with, you know, the Yale staff. Coach Shea and I are close, and my assistants are close with their assistants. Tom Compitello up at Yale is their offensive coordinator. He was our offensive coordinator a couple of years back, and we were able to scoop up Colin Nesdale, and he's coming in and he's done a great job. So he's been working with our goaltenders for the last 2 months, and then also with our man down unit, and he's done a spectacular job. And I think that has helped James to elevate his game as well, and all of our goaltenders.
How would you best characterize the Patriot League in 2021? You look at Loyola has been sort of the, you know, the team to beat over the course of their time in Patriot League, but you've been to the NCAA tournament. You knocked off the Greyhounds a couple weeks ago. Army has won the league before. Navy, new head coach. Holy Cross, new head coach. What are things looking like in the Patriot League?
Yeah, I think the Patriot League is best characterized by this every year, this year included. It's just a gauntlet. You know, there's really good coaches in the Patriot League. I think you know, that the talent level across the board is very similar. So really, anytime you play any team, it's going to be an absolute gauntlet of a game and a stretch that is, you know, just really hard and really tough. I think you know, the teams know each other really well. So the game plans are always there. And there's a lot of rivalries that exist. You know, just thinking about our rivalries, you know, we have a rivalry with, you know, with Bucknell, with Lafayette, with Colgate, you know, starting to develop one with Loyola. I don't think it was much of a rivalry. Maybe it is now that we finally beat them, you know, and hopefully we can continue that. But I think it's just a gauntlet overall. I think for this year, it's a little different just because of the way that it breaks out into the North Division and the South Division, and you don't play everybody. You know, so the games that are in your division, those divisional games are just magnitude or magnified. And, you know, when they're magnified, obviously tendency to have a little bit more pressure put on yourself and, you know, players maybe grip the stick a little bit more. So as I sit here and look at it, and, you know, the fact that we've been able to get those wins early on against Loyola and Bucknell as South Division Patriot League opponents, I think that was huge for us. And now, you know, big games coming up here, you know, Colgate and Army, I think in the grand scheme of things now become, you know, very big just because, you know, not only are we competing to make the Patriot League tournament as one of the top two teams in the South Division, but we're also competing just to host the tournament as well. And I think that is that's a huge thing too. And, you know, I think that's going to be a tight race as we come down the stretch here.
Good segue into our next question. Your team hasn't played in 2 weeks, and this week you'll face an old rival in Colgate on Sunday. What do you expect out of the Red Raiders and your team this weekend?
Yeah, I expect Colgate to be energized 100%. I think that, you know, they always are when they play against us, and I think our guys are when they play against them. So I'm excited for that. I think, you know, for us, there's always unique challenges for any, like I said, anybody this year, there's unique challenges for us this week. You know, doing the Colgate trip in a day trip is a challenge. That's not a close trip. But, you know, for us, we're not at the point where we've been permitted to do overnights yet. So we're going to have an early morning on Sunday morning. We're going to hop on two buses and head up, and, you know, 4 hours later, we're going to show up and try and get ourselves ready to play. And I thought our guys handled that well against Bucknell. We did the same thing out of Bucknell, but that was a 2-hour trip compared to a 3.5-4-hour trip. So definitely a challenge in that. And, you know, there won't be any fans up in the stands up there. So trying to produce the energy that is needed to have a fast start is going to be a major challenge this weekend. But that's definitely going to be one of our main goals heading into it.
Hard to believe it's been 14 years that you've been the head coach at Lehigh, but in that time, you've really transformed this program into a national power. What are some of the things that people, as you look towards the future, that you would like people to know about the Lehigh program if you're looking into a crystal ball?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think the values have really changed from day one about, you know, what we represent and who we want to be as a program. And I think that's been pretty clear. And, you know, when 14 years ago, when I got the job at Lehigh, you know, coming in from Duke University, you know, I felt like, you know, we had a pretty good model of what was needed to be a successful program. And obviously, you know, the year before accepting that job at Lehigh was we were coaching in the national championship game. So, you know, really kind of took that model and extended it to, you know, the administrators at Lehigh and our alumni at Lehigh and said, hey, this is what I'd like to be able to build towards. And, you know, obviously it's a different place, but there are a lot of similarities. And, you know, I feel like that model has been one that we've been able to, you know, kind of follow the blueprints for all the way through. And I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, kind of a straight line to the top. You know, I felt like we would need to kind of build and, you know, obviously and rebuild and then build again. And, you know, I feel like we're now kind of at that point where, you know, we, you know, have been able to kind of push, you know, into that top 20 consistently, and we're knocking on that top 10, knocking on the door of the top 10. And that's been kind of the vision from the beginning. But I think when you look at it, you know, it's about, you know, staying true to your core values. You know, for us, you know, there's four letters, PSDT. They stand for passion, selflessness, discipline, and toughness, and just staying true to those core values. It's how we recruit the people that we seek to come join our program. And then that's how we develop as well when they're here. But also while, you know, having kind of a program defining chip on our shoulder. And, you know, I think when you look at it, you know, maybe, you know, Lehigh hasn't always been the first choice for the recruits that we've been looking at and the ones that end up joining our program. But understanding that when they decide to come here, that they're wholeheartedly invested in being here and really want to be here. And once they get to that point in the recruiting process that they feel that way, for some that happens right away. For others, that might happen a little bit later on in the process. But, you know, having that understanding and then going and playing like they have something to prove every single day and training like they have something to prove and doing it, you know, with their brothers and for their brothers. And, you know, I feel like that's something that, that we can always hang our hat on.
Coach, you've got, you're talking about culture of your program. You have two candidates for the Lowe's Senior Class Awards, Teddy Leggett and Connor Gaffney. What have those two young men meant to your program and the Mountain Hawk community?
Yeah, so, you know, for us, what I try and do for my guys is just kind of define, you know, what it means to be a Lehigh lacrosse man and put that on paper. And you know, a lot of that has to do, I should say, it has very little to do with lacrosse. It's just about, you know, how you conduct yourselves off the field, you know, how you handle yourself socially, what you do in the classroom. Those are the things that, you know, ultimately are the most important, because the games are going to stop one day. And then, you know, you'll be left with your character. And that's something that, you know, we focus on a lot in developing that, but also, you know, trying to recruit that as well. So it's a little bit of a combination. But, you know, I think when you look at what it means to be a Lehigh lacrosse man, you know, you can take the examples of Teddy Leggett and Connor Gaffney, and those guys have embodied that. They've lived that out, and they're going to continue to live that out for the rest of their lives. So I feel like that's an important thing. And, you know, it's important to have models and role models. And I think those guys have been able to do that for the younger players in our program. And then the hope is that, you know, from a cultural standpoint, that continues to get passed down, those learned behaviors that those guys exemplify every single day. And I think that, you know, that's the hope, and that helps your culture.
All right, Coach, one last question. Thanks again for your time today. We've asked a few other coaches this. You mentioned that road trips are going to look a lot different in 2021. You have been around the Patriot League many times in your 14 years there. What is the one or two restaurants, road trip meals that you're going to miss the most in 2021?
To me, it's just one. There's one spot. I got turned on to this place by Dave Petromala, Sammy's Trattoria. That place is, it's, our guys love it. When we were down there the last few times for the Patriot League championships, we had every single dinner there. So, and sometimes it was four in a row, four nights we were there. And, you know, listen, when it comes to pregame meals, it comes to any meals at all. If Dave Petromala recommends it, we're going there. We're in.
Sounds like D-Fly at Chipotle. Straight meals.
No, that's awesome. Good answer. Thank you so much.
That is a great place.
Yeah, that place is a great place.
Yeah. Kevin, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck to you this weekend and throughout the rest of the season.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Really like that guy, Dix. I like Kevin a lot.
He's a good friend of mine. I have all the respect in the world for Kevin. Willing to talk to you at any point in time and, you know, just not about lacrosse. I got to know him years ago when Lehigh lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And then I would go into the studio with Anish, and we always would have a coach who had lost in the first round come in as our coach analyst. And Kevin did it, may have done it 2 years in a row, when they lost to Maryland in the first round, then they lost to Carolina in the first round. And I met him years ago when I was covering a Carolina Duke NCAA tournament game. I went to, that was like the year of lightning. It was like lightning everywhere. And we were supposed to be doing I had done Duke Providence earlier in the day. And then I jetted over to Chapel Hill. We were supposed to do Carolina Navy with Dave Cohen, was my broadcast partner. Dave Cohen, a lot of people remember Dave Cohen. John Hawes knows who Dave Cohen is because he used to be the announcer for the Yankees. He also used to do a ton of Syracuse basketball and lacrosse, but you may know him. You ever watch the movie Glory Road?
Yes.
With the story of Texas Western, now UTEP, yeah, winning the NCAA championship.
Josh,
Josh Lucas.
Yeah.
Or yeah, and yeah, but Dave, sure, but Dave Cohen, the championship game against Kentucky, that was played at Cole Fieldhouse. In the movie, Dave Cohen is the play-by-play guy.
Oh, cool.
That's Dave Cohen.
I will rewatch that at some point, and I'll look for Dave.
Yeah. So anyhow, Saul met Kevin along with the rest of the Duke coaching staff. It was John Donowski, Chris Gabrielli, who's now the head coach at Providence, Kevin, and we were at a Buffalo Wild Wings. We went to Buffalo Wild Wings to get some, and they were in the Buffalo because they came to watch the Carolina Navy game, and it got postponed because of lightning. So we were all Buffalo Wild Wings. But anyway, I digress. Kevin, a good man, and really happy that we could have him on our show.
So let's talk about his game this week, Dix. They are 3-0. They have a great win over Loyola, a couple other solid wins, and they will travel to Colgate to face an old rival in Hamilton, New York, this Sunday at 2 o'clock.
The Gate and Lehigh is rolling heavy right now, 3-0. Like Kevin mentioned, they've had a lot of ups and downs in their season, some pauses. They tried their darndest a week ago to get a game, and it just didn't – the chips didn't fall their way. But – They're a really, really good team, and they're playing with a ton of confidence right now. They might only be 3-0, but one of those wins is over Loyola, their first ever win over Loyola in the history of that program, which is a little, I'll be honest with you, it's a little surprising.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, given the fact that Lehigh has been to the NCAA tournament under Kevin at least twice. I know definitely those two occasions that I mentioned. So
Has monkeys on your back, I guess. But again, I wasn't aware that that was their first win over them.
The only reason I was aware is because when I, you know, was looking at things after that game, it was stated that it was Lehigh's first ever win over Loyola in men's lacrosse. So, I mean, you want to talk about possession machines? I mean, they've
got Gaffney
and Sisselberger are a terrific 1-2 punch. So,
yeah, they control the ball.
Yeah.
They're getting great play on the attack unit from another Curse brother, among others, Tommy Schelling and Christian Moulet. And then their defense. James Spence has been outstanding, as Kevin talked about. But they always have good rope play. Always have good rope play at Lehigh.
They're a tough team. They're a blue-collar, hard hat kind of team. They will try to intimidate you. And so far in 2021, they've done a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, it should be a great game. Lehigh Colgate rounds out the action for us on Sunday at 2 o'clock. All right, Dix, give and go time. This is a restaurant inspired give and go. The question we asked Kevin and we've asked some other coaches is in this pandemic time when road trips are minimalized and you're eating in the hotel or making day trips and eating bag lunches on the bus, what are the restaurants you're going to miss the most? And I was surprised both coaches that we've asked on camera that have, you know, we've asked them off behind the scenes, whatever, but both that we've asked on have both mentioned Baltimore restaurants.
Baltimore. Yes.
Yeah. So yes. Brian Brecht of Rutgers, he talked about going to the Rusty Scupper.
Rusty Scupper, yeah.
Yeah. And then today, Kevin mentioned Sammy's Trattoria. So
is it Trattoria or Trattoria? We have a Trattoria. We call it a Trattoria up here, Trattoria Amore in the Dorsey Hall Shopping Center. We go there a lot. So, but is it Trattoria?
We have Trattoria di Enrico in the King's Contrivance Shopping Center.
It's literally because that's where we get our haircut. Right, Master Barber in
your boy Twan. I gotta get him. He's gonna hook me up this Saturday. He doesn't even
look
know
at that. Day. Shout out Twan. Great job.
Up,
he used to be in the Master Barber. So it's uncanny. There's a Master Barber and a Trattoria in the Dorsey Hall Shopping Center, and there's a Master Barber and a Trattoria in where you live in Kingston.
I'm trying to explain this guy James Rouse was a genius, Dix.
Monopoly.
When he designed Columbia, he was like, every place needs a Master Barber. Trattoria,
that's right.
Bagel joint, a liquor store, and a
the Chinese place that is up. I think we have Hunan Legend. I think that one's Hunan Manor.
Where you no, Hoonah Manor is the one that's legit, that's on Snowdon River Parkway.
Okay.
Do we have, it's some other kind of Hoonah. It is okay, like Best Hoonah or something like that. You're right. I didn't even know.
And I bet you again, have a dry cleaner in there too. We also
of course,
have
they have cleaner. They have all the things right in there. We have a cobbler though. Do you have a cobbler?
No, I went to that cobbler, man. He's legit. He's just eternally caked.
It's 2021, man. You had a pair of shoes fixed at a cobbler?
Oh yeah, I had. I needed a pair of shoes resold.
Why didn't you just get a new pair of shoes? Like, what were they, like $700?
Because I liked the shoes, and I just needed the soles replaced.
Okay. I have another friend, a gummy. I don't think young people do this. I think this is an old guy thing. That's
absolutely.
Like, unique to us. All right. Anyway, enough of that. So, Dix, what? I don't know how you say it. Let's go with trattoria.
I'm cool with that. Or trattoria. I don't care.
I don't know how the Italians say it. And I'm embarrassed. I'll have to look it up, but it'll be too late. So, what are the restaurants in Baltimore? Everyone's coming to Baltimore to get good eats around lacrosse coaches, at least. What are the places that you, when you can get back out, I mean, really get back out and start visiting places whenever you want, everybody's there and places are filled up, whether it's after a game or not, what are the places that you're most interested in getting back to in Baltimore?
First and foremost, now, so it's not necessarily Baltimore per se, but I think I've mentioned on this show before that I love Indian lunch buffets. I do. And so the Royal Taj and Namaste on Cold Spring Lane. So Royal Taj is out in Restaurant Park in Columbia. And again, Namaste is on Cold Spring Lane.
For people who are just listening, you don't live around here, it's right off of I-95. You get hop off I-95 at 175. It's between the two beltways of Baltimore and DC. And you can be, it's 5 minutes from I-95, 3 minutes from I-95, and you can get like the best Indian buffet you'll ever want. So if you're ever traveling south, hit up the Royal Taj.
And Namaste is pretty good too. That's right off of 83 on Cold Spring Lane, down the street from Loyola University. So those are two things I'm really looking forward to. Cooper's Tavern in Baltimore. I'm looking forward to that. Going back down in Phillips Point.
You know what they got there? Orange Crushes. Orange Crush at Cooper's is so
guess
good.
What, guess what my latest find is in the alcohol category?
I know this.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a Deep Eddie's Lime?
Yes. How'd you know?
You sent a picture to me this weekend.
Oh, did I? Oh, God. Yeah, I don't remember that.
Saturday night, you sent a picture to me. And I was like, what is this? Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay. The Deep Eddie Lime is legit, man. It is good. So Cooper's. And I'm looking forward to going to a steakhouse, whether it's Ruth's Chris, and I know they're chain or whatever, but I've never had a bad meal at Ruth's Chris. Prime rib, I wouldn't mind hitting up the prime rib. Love the prime rib. My wife feels like it needs to be updated, but I think that's the charm. It's like an old supper club kind of thing. Yeah, those are some of the places I'm looking forward to going to. Just right off the top of my head, we've still gone out a lot during the pandemic.
Oh, good.
I shouldn't say a lot, but a lot of outdoor dining. White Oak Tavern in Ellicott City. I went to a Cuban place in Burtonsville a couple weeks ago. I think it's called Cuba de Ayoa, like Cuba de Oro or something like that. That was awesome. I've never been to a Cuban restaurant before. So we did that. You know what I really miss though? I miss PJ's Pub. I really miss PJ's Pub.
So that's on my list, Dix, is I miss PJ's and our good friend and the proprietor of PJ's Pub died during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Jerry Smith. And I want to go to PJ's Pub. That's all. That's my number on my list here.
Oh,
my three places. Whatever it is now. I don't know
it's
what
it's a,
what
it's a home slice. It's a pizza place.
But I want to go there and have a beer and maybe pour a little bit out on the floor in memory of our good friend, Jerry
One
Smith.
One for you and one for your homie.
Yeah, so that's on my list. So my other two are, you know what my favorite like all-time Baltimore restaurant is? I used to live in Canton.
Let me guess. Oh, so it's in Canton?
Yeah, it's in Canton.
Clotta.
Good guess, but
let me guess again.
Not
Nacho Mama's.
Yeah, man, I love that place. Sí, muy bien. Y tú? It's so good. I love the atmosphere, the hubcap margaritas, the wings, the chips and salsa, the bartenders, everything about that place, I'm all about. I'm in the 100 Natty Bows Club there.
You are?
Yeah.
Look at you.
I drank 100 Natty Bows there in a year.
In one night?
I never tell that story. So I walk in there and I said, I saw they had like a, you know, the Fred Flintstone, like Poobah, Grand Poobah hat or whatever from like the Lodge. The
Water Buffalo Club.
Yeah. And they had like one of those kind of things. It had Natty Bow on it. And it was behind the bar. And I was friends with the Delaware Dave, the bartender. I'm like, Dave, what's that hat? I didn't get one of those. And he goes, oh, it's our Natty Bow Club. You drink 100 Natty Bows here in a year and we'll give you one of these. I said, okay. I started doing the math in my head. I was like, it's going to be really hard to do. I got to drink them here. And he's like, yeah. Like, okay. And I look over this was like around Valentine's Day. I said, when did you start this?
Goes, what year was this?
It was 10 years ago. All right. So it was, they had started it at the beginning of the year and it was around Valentine's Day. And some guy at the bar that night hit the 100 mark. I was like, wow. This guy drank 100 Natty Bows in this bar in 6 or 7 weeks. That's impossible.
Like, not really?
How did he do that? He
must go there. Okay, let's say he lives down there. Okay, real quick. Let's say
I hope he walks home.
Okay, you're right. Let's say he lives down there.
Yeah. Sure.
Let's say he goes there on like a Tuesday night and has 10, which is a lot, but
it's a lot. They're delicious.
And then let's say he goes there on the weekend, maybe a Saturday and or Sunday. No, let's say he has like 5 on Tuesday night or Wednesday night, but then he goes back on the weekend. He's a regular, mm-hmm. and he has 20 on those 2 days. I mean, there you go. That's 25 in a week right there.
Now, I considered myself a regular, and I'd never seen this guy before. And think about this. What if he didn't start on January 1st or 2nd? What if he started February 10th, yeah, and he drank them all in 1 week?
Then he's got a serious issue.
Yeah, it was amazing, and I was very impressed with this young man. So I said, I need to do this.
I was
this.
A young man. It wasn't even like an old grizzled
veteran. I was like 25 or something like that. Oh, wow. Like a bro living down there. I was like, I gotta get in on this. So I started, I was like, Dave, put what I had tonight down. He's like, okay, start with 6. And he pulls out these index cards. You know, like those things your mom used to have? Like yes. A little plastic box with their recipes on like little index cards.
Yeah.
He pulls that out. And he writes down, he starts a new card for me and he puts like 6.
Oh, wait a minute. I know how you got there. You got a hold of that card and we're
filling it out. I'll have to send you the pictures of the night we hit 100. I
did. Who's it with we?
A good friend of mine who was Steve Sowers, who no relation to Michael, but he worked for me at Towson. We worked together and now he works at the University of Missouri Athletic Department out in Columbia, Missouri. So awesome time. The big dude, he played college football at Western Illinois, and he's just one of my favorite guys to hang out with ever. And we had a great time. I had like 6 beers to go. Mm-hmm. He had about 19.
See, that's
and
that's
he crushed it. I mean, this guy's 6'5". I mean, he was a monster, and it was so much fun. We were behind the bar. There's pictures. It was like the Hangover when the Hangover ends, and they take all the pictures and they see the pictures from the next day. That's what it kind of looked like. It was
fun. You'd pulled out a molar and tried to steal somebody's tiger down in camp.
I don't want to incriminate myself. So yeah. Nacho Mamas, and then my other place would be Little Italy. I have a soft spot for there. It's you know, if people are familiar with Baltimore, Inside Lacrosse is like a block away, and it was a great place to go for a really nice dinner. You could walk to. And I don't really have. I'm fond of a couple of places, but just in general, there's a block or two of restaurants on both sides. I really like Germano's. That's where Amy and I had our rehearsal dinner. It's one of our favorite places. I don't even know what's still open over there.
That's the question. So
yeah, Amici's is really good.
Our favorite was DeMimo, and DeMimo closed. Well, DeMimo closed before the pandemic.
That place was so good.
Yeah, man. It was great.
I had one of the best meals I ever had over there one time. Yeah. Because the a good restaurant, they get better waiters and waitresses.
Right.
And you know, this guy, his description of what I was about to eat, he was like, well, we take this and we take the fish out of the shell, and then we do this, this, and this, and we replace it back into the the crab meat. Yeah. And you're like, I'll have that. That sounds amazing.
We had our rehearsal dinner at Chipperelli's a long time ago. And that was good. But DeMimo was the one that really hit home for us. And then Aldo's is a great place. I've never been to Aldo's. I should get there. That's the Loyola High School, pair of brothers that went to Loyola High School. Sergio Vitale, his family owns that.
Yeah, a lot of great places. I'm sad. I'm actually looking at a map right now at Little Italy, and there's like half the restaurants that used to be. And I think a lot of them probably went out of business, which is really sad.
You know, and I don't want to be like a downer, but, you know, Baltimore, it's a tough time in Baltimore all the way around. And this pandemic has certainly not been anything that the city of Baltimore needed. So, it's been tough.
Amen to that. Well, thanks for ending this on a real downer, Dix.
Yeah, my bad. What do you want to get to do? Get back up again. Let's talk about Hannah saying, let's get it.
We would like to thank our guest this week, Lehigh head coach Kevin Cassis. Thanks for coming on, Kevin. And best of luck to you and the Mountain Hawks this week and throughout the season. If you like what you've heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review. A good one, please. And tell a friend and share the love. It's free. Why wouldn't you? Also, we always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I am simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games while you can. Hannah Flynn comes in. Dixie, let's get it.
I like it. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Dixie, let's get it.
That was very good. Let's do a second take, though. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Dixie, let's get it.
What's the old Paris Hilton soundbite? Huge.